For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh, the horn, let's go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a selfless, they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of that you ever played against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to an earmuff edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, well, shit.
I feel the same way, man. You know, these are the kind of shows we don't like doing, and we've been very blessed that, you know, we have a great football program that we support that's had a great run. And these are definitely tough shows to do. I have a question for you. As I was watching this game, especially in the frustrating parts toward the end, you know, since Saban has been there, is it just me or any time Auburn has snuck out a win going back to the Cam Newton game, you know, and the kick six and all that? Why is it always fluky shit, right? Like when we win, we beat them solidly. When they win like fluke crap. It's like the world turns upside down on that Saturday. Why is that? Is that just me, or did you feel like that after this ball game?
No, I feel like there's that Auburn sort of black magic, or it'd make more sense if it were LSU, right? You could call it just pure voodoo,
right?
But there is always something sort of wonky. You know, and I think back, you know, I think it was that 2010 game, which, by the way, is the last, you know, time Alabama's had two losses in a season. But, you know, I go back to then when, you know, the fumble and the ball sort of walking down the sideline and, you know, Mark Barron's injury and just the oddities. And this game had very, you know, had very similar things. And, you know, I don't want to take away and detract from what Auburn accomplished, but, the interception return for a touchdown was a pretty darn fluky thing. And, you know, maybe the other pick six was less fluky, but there was enough of those kinds of things. They had a drive in which the last three passes, you know, one was more improbable, you know, than the last. And, even just the way not just the game, but the half ended, there were, you know, fluky, I think is the right word. It's inexplicable. It's diabolical. It's so very Auburn.
It is, man, but it's like, it just makes it so, like if we had just been, you know, if we had just lost the game, right? I guess if Alabama had lost the game and the best team won, you know, it would just feel different. And I guess right. That's the best way to say it is, in the years where they have won, they haven't been the better team, in my opinion. And
right.
And I know some people's going to say that's sour grapes and you're a homer and whatever, but if you could go back and just watch these couple fluky games and you could splice them together and just watch them back to back to back, or if you could just splice the few crazy ass plays, right? If you could take 10 or 15 plays from these few games and splice them together, people would be like, really? I mean, just the odds of it, man. It's just, I think that's what makes it more tough to swallow for me.
No, and it's not just when Auburn plays Alabama. You know, a couple of years ago, it was the kick six year in, you know, nearly back-to-back games or two out of three games. That happened against Alabama, and then they've got that pass against Georgia that sort of ricocheted off the defender. And they return for a touchdown to win that game. And so anytime something and it's almost a shorthand, right? Because I've been in stands and I've said it and I've heard other people say it or, you know, just around me that when something like the flukiest thing that can happen in a game, someone will say, that's just so Auburn. And it doesn't matter if the opponent really is Auburn or if it's something else. But if a ball takes a walking, sort of a wonky bounce and just ends up in the most improbable of events, then it's almost like the Clemsoning, right? That it's you know, it's so very Auburn of that play. And it's almost like that's become an expression.
Oh, absolutely, man. Well, I will tell you, you know, is because obviously, you know, we don't want to do this show, but we, you know, this is what we do. I will tell you that if it wasn't for those couple pick sixes, because, you know, you and I talked about this game a couple weeks ago, you know, whenever I wasn't able to join you for this last podcast. And, you know, if it wasn't for those two pick sixes, this outcome would have kind of turned out the way we thought, right? I mean, they would have won by, you know, Alabama would have won by more than 10 points, and that probably would have been enough.
Yeah, you could say those, and I read this somewhere, and so I'm more parroting back than expressing an opinion, although I don't disagree with it. You know, you take those two pick sixes, and it's, you know, it's very probably a 21-point swing. And, you know, one of the pick sixes was so far away, you couldn't assume that that's a scoring drive. But, you know, hitting you know, Najee in the back, and that's sort of a rare kind of event. Yeah, I think if you take away and look, it does sound sour grapey, and so I want to be careful with that. But if you do take those away, then, you know, the score differential is very different. We can talk about, you know, what happened at half and all of that. But let me put a pin in that thought. And, you know, if we can swallow sort of the sour taste of this game, let me throw another thought at you. This game was almost a microcosm of the season. If we sat down at the beginning of the season, and maybe we did, I'd have to go back and listen, and we listed the types of characteristics that this Alabama offense or this Alabama team would have. I mean, tell me which of these, you know, you disagree with how we would have classified the team, right? It's an explosive offense. It's going to have a suspect defense. There's going to be discipline issues. There's going to be penalties, and there's trouble with the kicking game or questions with the kicking game. And we saw all of those in this game, and we saw all of those sort of littered throughout the season. And I know on the show we were really optimistic about the defense coming together, and there was progression on the defense. It never peaked. It never got to that level. And, you know, LSU certainly exploited it, and Auburn in their own way they did as well. And so in some sense, I mean, I hate to say we saw this coming, but in some sense, it was manifest. Everything that we would have been concerned about at the beginning of the season in fall camp.
Yes, but I think in this run that Alabama has, and obviously there are a lot of people trying to write Alabama off at this point, right, which is just humorous to me. You know, look at – you know, I read one article that said, you know, all these things had to happen for Alabama to get knocked out of the playoff for the first time since its creation. And so just like I told you against LSU, when I said, look at all the things that happened in the LSU game, and yet look at what the margin of victory was for LSU. And if you would have flipped those things and had all those things happen to LSU, would they have only lost to us by a few points? Well, take this game, man. We have a quarterback who has played a couple games recently because of Tua's injury, but, and granted, he's not a true freshman, so granted, he's been in the system. But how many teams in the country could go against an SEC defense like Auburn's with a backup quarterback and put these kind of points on the board?
Right.
Right? I mean, and on defense, I will tell you that I think the injuries just caught up with this team. You know, you take the two pick sixes away, and the reason I'm saying take them away is because I don't want to, you know, that's not the defense's fault, right?
Sure.
And so
sure.
If you take those two pick sixes away, the defense, you know, granted, did they give up more points than we've been accustomed to? Yes. Would they have benefited from the likes of Ronnie Harrison and some of these other guys still being there? Of course. You know, did they lose more players to the NFL than other teams? Sure. But when I say take those two pick sixes away, like you said, we're not trying to be sour grapes, but I guess what I'm saying is with everything they were up against, playing on the road against, you know, their arch rival, with a, you know, bullseye on their back, with a backup quarterback, you know, if you would have told me going into this game that Alabama would have put 45 points on the board, I'd have told you you're crazy. Like I wouldn't have guessed. I was pleasantly surprised that we put those kind of points on the board. How surprised were you by the 45 points?
Well, you know, 45 is a big number. And so I don't know that I would have forecasted either of those numbers. I wouldn't have forecasted it, win, lose, or draw. I would not have forecasted Alabama scores 45, and I wouldn't have forecasted, you know, that Auburn, you know, scores 48. And so, you know, 38 to 35, 28 to you know, get, you know, give Auburn the game. I'm not speaking outcome. I'm just speaking, you know, points scored, you know, 28 to 25. You know, I probably would have gone in that ballpark, you know, 30 to 27 or something.
Right.
And then sort of pick them on who would win. I'm not making a statement on Alabama winning. I'm just saying I didn't expect that we would score that much. And I didn't expect, you know, certainly that the defense would allow that many points.
I gotcha. Well, start us off with offense here, you know, or I guess let me start you off with offense. You know, with the exception of those two pick sixes, which obviously were a big deal, right? And obviously, you know, Mac would love to get those back. I was pretty happy with how he played. That minus those two decisions. What's your thoughts?
Oh, I think absolutely. And I think, you know, I think officially I want to christen him Councilman Jones, you know, because he demonstrated, you know, such leadership. He took responsibility for the errors that there were, and he gave freely the credit for the good things that happened. When there were penalties, you know, he was telling folks, "Hey, this is going to be all right. We're going to overcome this."
Clapping his hands and stuff. Yep.
Right. And then he was often, there were a couple of times where he's the one that scrambled for the yards to make up for the penalty. So I think he demonstrated a great amount of leadership, and that's something that, I mean, that's all, he didn't just do that on Saturday. That's part of his persona, but we haven't had a chance to see it because he's doing that in practice. He's doing that, you know, in the facility. And so to see that, and we didn't need to see that in his prior starts, Arkansas and the Catamounts, right? We didn't need to see that. That didn't need to be demonstrated against those opponents. But against Auburn, you know, he really stepped into the role, and, you know, he went 26 of 39, you know, four touchdowns. And he threw for 335. And so, you know, you said, you know, last week that he'd throw for 300 against Western Carolina, and he threw for 275. And obviously he was out, you know, at halftime or just after half. But, you know, Tom, he averaged across those two games over 300 yards a game. That's pretty impressive. You know, even though one of them's the Catamounts, for him to come in to that circumstance, and then certainly this game, I thought he acquitted himself very well. We can talk about who's the starting quarterback next season, I think at another time, but I think he certainly acquitted himself well, and there's no disclaimer, well, look at who he played. No, he played a legit SEC defense, and he hung a 335 on him.
No, absolutely. Well, talk to me about, I know it's special teams, but, you know, it's top of the mind because, you know, the missed field goal was, you know, was huge there. So I just want to blend this over to offense for a second. And it's easy to second guess, very easy to second guess. Obviously, Najee Harris had a great game. Obviously, he was the workhorse. I was surprised that Brian Robinson only got two carries. And, you know, one of his carries specifically just, you know, didn't look that good. Last year against Georgia in the semis, you know, Saban went through this great deal of effort to, you know, he took the ball out of the offense's hands, right? And you remember when you know, literally, well, I'll say it this way. You never want a game to come down to the field goal kicker, right? I mean, yes, there's been some really great kickers out there, but you never want a game to come down to the field goal kicker. And so with all the trials and tribulations that Saban has endured this year, I was a little surprised with the play calling on that last series before the missed field goal. And what I mean by that is I know he likes to save timeouts, and I know he almost got the ball back. But Najee had just run ragged through them, right? 27 carries for 146 yards. And I liken it back to Derrick Henry when he put this team on his shoulder that game against LSU. And when Mark Ingram put his, you know, team on the shoulders in that Wildcat in that South Carolina game.
Yep.
When it was first and 10 and Najee, you know, and Najee basically loses 1 yard at first and goal at the 9 yard line. You proceed on second and third to take your quarterback who's done more than you would have expected a backup to do. And so it's easy to second guess, man, but with the three tight end look they were doing and stuff, why don't you come back second down at the nine and just run the rock with Najee, and third down, run the rock with Najee? And were you surprised that they just gave up on the run there after that first and goal?
Well, I think that, you know, it's easy to sort of hindsight 2020, and it's also easy in the moment to overthink it. And so I think you get in a compressed field and you know that Auburn has a stout defensive line that you want to play away from your opponent's strength. But in doing that, we really played away from our strength, especially in the moment, because Najee was playing so well. And I found myself watching the game. Hey, let's bring in the beef package, right? I mean, we have two offensive linemen that are wearing tight end numbers. Let's bring those guys in. Let's bring Ollie Cajo in there, and let's just tell our guys and let's tell their guys. This is old
school. What we're doing. Yeah,
we're gonna you know, attempt to kind of run it down your throat here, and I wish we had taken a couple of downs to do that. And you can do it once. But you got to do that. No, we're going to line up and we're going to do that again. And then we're going to do it again. And for good measure, we're going to do it again. And I think that if we had, and again, I don't know this to be true, but sure, just part of me that just has a degree of confidence that if we had lined up and just run behind some of the big linemen and the tight ends, which are essentially, you know, linemen, and you know, you could sprinkle in some formation and maybe a misdirection or something, but I think that we could have I think we could have done that in that circumstance. I know that, you know, we do have some confidence in the kicker and he's performed well, but you can take all of that. He's making his PATs and when we let him kick, he's making those kicks, but those are all very controlled circumstances. They're not the weight of this game on the road. That's a whole different thing. And, you know, that game in a blowout and Bryant Denny, he's going to hit the kick. And if he doesn't, correct, it doesn't matter. But in this game, when that kick matters against this opponent, just there's a certain gravity that comes with that. That, and look, I don't, you know, want to be the guy that picks on, you know, Bulovis and I hate, there's a part of me that hates the fact that he has to issue an apology because of sort of the, you know, the noise that he's hearing. At the same time, I do wish we had just lined up and tried to, you know, force feed them the ball. I there's a part of me that really thinks that would have gone over much better. And then Najee, you mentioned, you know, Derrick Henry. I completely agree with that. The way he started the game, I said, you know, we may not see a whole lot of Robinson, and we may see 30 carries from Najee, and that's not far off, although we saw a lot less Robinson than I was thinking. Only two carries. He only saw a limited play against Western Carolina, and so there's a part of me that wonders, is there an injury that we don't know about, or is there something else going on? I think that's going to be a storyline to watch out for.
Oh, sure, but to your point, right, kudos to him for making the 43-yarder earlier in the game, right? But the game wasn't on the line then.
The pressure profile is completely different.
Right, and so I just wish that we would have sat there and said, we've got four downs to get 10 yards, and we're putting this on your shoulders, offensive line, right, plus your three tight ends. It's not like we had not shown in the game that we could do it.
Right.
So that was my frustration. And so I'm going to tell you, as good of a game as I think Sarkisian called under the circumstances of having a couple weeks to do this, you know, maybe he did just outthink himself there. And I will tell you very quick, I just went back and pulled, cause I was curious. I just went back and pulled the last, decade worth of Auburn, Alabama games. And I guess what I was trying to say earlier is when you look at the outcome of these games, you know, here they are just barely beating us. And more times than not, we're just laying the wood on them, you know, and beating them by four or five touchdowns. So I guess that's what I was referring to.
Right.
So what else would you like to, what else jumped out at you on offense?
You know, I just think, and we can certainly talk about him in special teams, but I think Jalen Waddle was just otherworldly. You know, he had three receiving touchdowns out of four catches, 98 yards. He just looked electric. And, there was a couple times, whatever Auburn did, he had a response. And certainly the kickoff return for a touchdown, and then his touchdown, right before half, was just electric. And it seemed that obviously he was the fastest guy on the field, and it didn't appear that it was close. A couple of the times him getting to the corner was the most amazing play. Because not only did he had to outrace the guy, you know, the guy was in front of him. The guy had leverage on him, and he outraced the leverage to still get the corner. That's just impressive.
Well, you could clearly see in this game that Auburn did not have the talent in the back end that LSU has.
Right.
And you could just tell the difference in speed there. You know, it is – you talk about Waddling. Isn't it interesting that during this season, you know, all these guys has had just, you know, a monster game at different points. And it goes back to, you know, I hope Bama fans have enjoyed these weapons, which is Ruggs and Waddle and Smith and Judy, because, you know, as you look back, they've all this season had, you know, it goes back to, you can't take them all away, right? You can't take all the weapons away. And so look at the games where, I guess it is interesting, and probably since we've been doing this show, I can't remember a time when we've had so many guys have multi-touchdown games. You know, you go back to the days of an Amari Cooper or Julio Jones, and, you know, he would be the guy with 12 catches, and he would be the guy that, you know, you go to every single time. So I'm really happy for Waddle that he got in on the multi-touchdown performance.
No, he did. He did. And even looking at the other guys, you know, Ruggs had six catches for 99. Smitty had five for 50, and Jerry had five, but they were the shorter variety. He had 26. What's interesting is all three of those guys technically had more catches than Waddle. It was a pretty, Waddle got the big sort of explosive plays, but it was a pretty good distribution of the ball across those four receivers.
No, absolutely. Well, I will tell you, we were talking about Najee early on in this game. what I noticed early on this game too is, you know, we talked about the benefit of having, you know, of the offensive line and how, you know, how they had started to gel kind of at the midpoint, you know, season mark, so to speak. And, you know, it really materialized, you know, once they kind of got a formation, you know, once Deontay Brown came back, it really made a difference for this team. And to your point, even though the storyline was the two seniors on Auburn's defensive line, and granted, take nothing away from them, right? They're going to be first round draft picks and they're going to play on Sundays. But, you know, Evan Neal was up to the test. We were pulling Landon Dickerson. We were pulling Deontay Brown. And I was a little surprised at how easily we were able to run the football, which, you know, I guess that's what makes this so damn sickening is, you know, if you and I would have gone to Vegas before this game and they'd have said, okay, here's what we want you to bet. We want you to bet Mac Jones throws for 335 yards and Najee Harris runs for 146 against this Auburn team.
Right.
We'd have thought they're crazy.
I would have bet the win, and I wouldn't have bet those two things.
I mean, it's so frustrating, man, because to lose a game like this, considering what we were able to do, is just so damn frustrating. What else jumped out at you on offense? What did you think real quick of the three tight end look? I thought that was a nice wrinkle that we came out with on the opening series.
No, I think I think that, you know, that's the statement that we were going to run the ball and that we were going to try to match their defensive front. And like I said, it's a legit SEC defensive front. I think that defensive front, not the secondary, not the back eight, but I think the front is stronger than LSU's. And the fact that we went out with some intentionality to run the ball, I thought was impressive. I want to talk about, you know, or at least just, you know, mention and ask a question about the offensive line. I think they played well. You're not going to close out, or you're not going to, you know, Auburn's defensive front is going to have some success. They're, you know, any front is going to, and especially one quality as Auburn's. And so, you know, the fact that they had plays and took advantage of our offensive line, that's going to happen. That's going to be in the ebb and flow of the contest. But I think overall, I think the Alabama offensive line played really well. I was pleased with them. What do you make, though? There were four false starts, and there was an allusion to, in a number of articles that I read, an allusion to communication across the front. And even at one point, Jed, after he got his second, he, you know, demonstratively went over and, you know, was communicating with Landon Dickerson about, you know, something. I wonder, you know, what your thought is on that. Do you think that has something to do with either the signals or just the communication between the center and the quarterback snapping in a loud sort of hostile environment? That Mac and Landon haven't had that experience and maybe had a little bit of issue there. What's your thought there? Or was it just the lineman jumping?
No, I think it was the communication between Landon and Mac. And unfortunately, I don't think we see those four false starts if it would have been our year to play this in Bryant Denny.
Right.
But by the same token, we had, what, 12 or 13 penalties on the day. And so when you lose a game by 3 points, a high scoring affair with your backup quarterback, because your star quarterback was gone for the season, you can't have 12 or 13 penalties. I mean,
what's the nature of the game? And again, this is where it looks like, you know, we're just inventorying things, but the nature of the game where points are, you know, explosively provided in a 3-point margin, it's easy to find a handful of things that could have, you know, swayed the score the other way, especially when it seemed that most of call it the fortuitous bounce, if you will, went in the direction of, you know, the other guys.
Oh, absolutely. Tell me what else would you like to touch on offense?
I just want to underscore that, you know, the offense, I think, played certainly well enough to win, even with, you know, some of the issues, 28 first downs, 515 yards, 35 minutes, almost 36 minutes time of possession. You know, those are certainly impressive numbers. And, you know, I just hats off to Mac Jones and the leadership that he demonstrated. I don't want to take anything away from that, as frustrating as the experience was.
All right. Who are you giving your mini game ball to?
I'm going Slade Bolden with mini game ball. Early in the game, there was a 14 play drive for a touchdown, and it's sort of a critical juncture in that drive. There was a fourth and one, and we brought Slade in to run the wild, sort of the wildcat. I'm not a savant, but I feel like I knew exactly what he was going to do. And so you have to think that the defensive front did as well. And he was able to get a 3-yard gain there. And so I thought that was a big play. And it's an understated play in the context of the full sort of event. But that was certainly a fourth down play. I think it led to Alabama going up, 10 to nothing. And so it was an early touchdown that's kind of forgotten in the context. But that's a big play. And hats off to Slade Bolden there.
Okay. I'm going to give my mini game ball to all three tight ends who were featured in the three tight end formation. I like the big uglies. I like the spin of the look of coming out, in that formation and just I like the idea of the game plan of trying to take some pressure off Mac, although they did let him complete some passes early. But just, kudos to all three of those guys who started in that tight end formation, because obviously, not having Miller Forrestall able to go in this game and what we've said he's meant to this team, they had to come up with a different wrinkle. And so hats off to those guys.
Right.
Let me ask you a question on defense here, if I can. It's easy to look at the score and it's easy to say, cause you said offensively that the offense did enough to win. Well, this is probably going to be, a lot of people are not going to agree with me. But I would say for the most part, the defense did enough to win. What's your thoughts on that?
I think, I don't think that's far off. I don't think that's far off. I think the biggest issue that we had that Alabama had on defense, I mean, look, we held them to 354 total yards, 200, almost 200 yards less than the Alabama offense ran off. Their quarterback was under 50% passing. I think that's certainly something. They were 5 of 13 on third downs. And so we were getting them off the field when they got the third down. But we had the Alabama defense had the biggest struggle on their run fits. And, Tommy, every time I think about, the significance of plugging every gap or accounting for every gap, the example that we've gone back to a couple times on the podcast is that Vitek game, what is now several years ago. Just the Alabama defense was dominating in that game, and they allow one block, one linebacker that misses the fill, and they run an 80-yard touchdown. And they have this explosive play amidst being just shut down all day. And it's a run. It's a gashing run right up the middle. And it, as ugly as it can be, and it's purely the function of a gap not being fit. And we seem to struggle, or the Alabama defense seemed to struggle with that almost all day against Auburn. And so there wasn't an 80-yard run, but damn if there wasn't a lot of 10 and 12 and 8 and 16-yard runs, and any number of those should have been just shut down and if and nuts and all of that. But this is a game where we miss Dylan Moses as much as we've missed him all season combined.
Oh, sure. And I guess what I meant by they did enough to win the game is, you know, we talked earlier in the show about, I think these injuries caught up with them. I think not having DJ Dell in this game was a big deal.
Right.
Right. You had guys like Christian Barmore and Phil Darian Mathis and, you know, Musica, who played a lot of snaps. And I want to take nothing away from them, okay? But, you know, DJ Dell obviously was a starter for a reason. And Aboji wasn't there. LeBron Ray wasn't there. Laquan Davis was, you know, banged up. But you take Christian Barmore, who's a redshirt freshman, and Mathis, a redshirt sophomore, and these guys, and then you take Byron Young, you know, true freshman. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I think on the defensive side of the ball, when you talk about the run fits and stuff, I think the injuries to the front seven, you know, really caught up to Alabama on that last drive. So I guess what I mean is when I say the defense did enough to win the game, I guess what I mean by that is, you know, they held this Auburn team to two field goals in the second half. I mean, you know, minus, and I'm going to get to, well, I'm sorry. They held them to two field goals and a touchdown to correctly state this. But I think it was that last touchdown drive that was indicative of what you're talking about and talking about what we knew this team was going to face at the beginning of the year. And, you know, you talk about the nemesis of the running quarterback, right? Well, in that last drive where Auburn, you know, went ahead and scored their only touchdown of the second half, Bo Nix had a run for 15 yards. He had a run for 12 yards. And then they had that roughing the passer penalty, right? Which tacked on another 15 yards. And so on their last drive that got that one touchdown, that running quarterback and that roughing the passer penalty was huge. It goes back to the, you know, number of penalties we talked about again. But I think on that last drive, you saw the depth issues, the injury issues, the lack of Dylan Moses' issues. I think it all just came to a head on that last drive where they were able to, you know, go 11 plays for 77 yards and go ahead in the game.
No, I think DJ Dale's a good reference. You know, the fact that he was out, you know, he was probably more accessible than Dylan Moses. Moses has been out since July. You know, but DJ Dell missed the last two games with an injury in Mississippi State game. And I agree. That's a cat that we definitely could have benefited. You know, the D line definitely could have benefited by him on Saturday.
But even Jennings and Terrell Lewis, there's nobody consistently playing in the rotation behind them.
Right.
Right. And so you pretty much played this game with, you didn't rotate a whole lot of guys because you didn't have a whole lot of guys to rotate. And right. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that all the stats that you rattled off earlier, I think is indicative of what I'm saying is that I think for the most part, this Auburn offense wasn't, you know, they weren't able to do a whole lot. Talk to me about the play at the end of the half, because this goes back to the whole fluky crap, right? Because I was talking to somebody about this at work today. You know, this needs to be a change to this replay rule. The fact that they let them run a play with 1 second left. Well, what is your, you know, this goes back to like the ball bouncing down the field 25 yards in the 2010 game. What is your thoughts on how that allowed Auburn to get points on the board before half?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely one of the things that I, you know, I wanted to spend a minute with. I think
the outcome of the game, right? That 3 points was the outcome. Was of the it, game.
You know, it's ironic, right? That is the 3 point differential. That's for certain. I think that I think he was down. And in the process of going down, and so there's a couple of ways to sort of break this down. Was he down with there still being a second left on the clock? I'm not sure that there was. But okay, let's get past that. It is a running clock at that point, which is, that is critically different. It's a live clock versus a dead clock. That is all the difference resides in that distinction. When it is a live clock, the clock stops to reset the downs. But as soon as the down is, as soon as it's reset, then the clock starts again. And so it's not like a timeout where the ball doesn't start until the snap, where the clock doesn't start until the snap. It is, when it's a live clock, as soon as the ball is set, then the clock starts. And one of the sideline, one of the officials on the sideline told, you know, Coach Saban that even if they put a second on, they won't have enough time to run a play because it'll be a live. As soon as they set the ball, the clock will start. They'll run out of clock. And that is the more critical component, is that the replay allowed it to effectively become a dead ball.
Right.
That is, there'll be a rule change over that. And we've seen what do they call it in different circumstances? When there's a penalty, there's a 10-second runoff.
Right.
In critical sort of times of the game. And right. So what like, we're going to say, I don't know how much of this you had sort of lined up to say, but there will be a rule change, that there will be some sort of runoff. Hey, I'm not mad at replay. Let's use replay and get it right, but let's not get it wrong while we're getting it right. Right. And so, yep, there's a second left. All right. Now it's gone because we got it right. There's a second left, but it's still a running, it's still a live clock. It's, you know, and there are distinctions. There are differences. There's a running clock, there's a live clock, and there's a dead clock. And this was a live clock. And so as soon as I set the ball, which is, you know, a lot of times you're not even back up to the line of scrimmage. As soon as they set the ball, not at the snap, but as soon as they set it, they shouldn't have had time to run that play.
No, I agree. I want to get your thoughts on that. Now, let me ask you this. On that play, or on that series, what do you – and obviously it's easy to say this now, but what aided that was a 30-yard kickoff by Bolivis, you know, and they were able to fair catch it at the 35-yard line.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? There's 33 seconds left in the half. He's been putting the ball in the end zone some on, you know, he's done a couple good jobs with, you know, as I look back at the stats here, you know, there was, you know, a couple different kickoffs here. I guess all three of the previous kickoffs had been, you know, 50 yards plus kick touchbacks. Why do you give him the ball on the 35 with 20, you know, with 30 seconds left in the half?
You're taking away the opportunity for them to return it. And I think that in some respects, I think the toughest position to coach, or the toughest coordinator, is special teams coordinator, because there's so many different things, a variety of things.
But that's outthinking that yourself, right? Teams. That's outthinking.
It's a mix of offense and defense mentalities. And, you know, we've got a punt returner or a kick returner that we think we're going to get, you know, some action out of, which we did. And mentally, psychologically, some of that may carry over. Well, we can't let them get a big return. And so, well, let's kick it to an up man and then put it on the defense. They're not going to drive, you know. And look, their field goal kicker, the ironic stat going into the game is that Bolivis had better stats than their kicker.
Yeah.
And then their kicker goes out and kicks, you know, 4 40-yard kicks. And, you know, he had been batting under 500 in the last month of the season. And so I think you take all that together, their kicker's not going to make it. And let's not let them have a return. So there's a little bit, you're trying to take the oxygen out of the room. I mean, I can see where I would have landed on that too.
Well, I just think that, you know, you coach your special teams to play at a high level. We haven't, you know, we've done pretty well in special teams this season. I think you just stay with what got you there and you just kick the ball in the end zone. I mean, he had sat there and had a touchback two or three of the previous plays. I just, I didn't like giving them the ball at the 35-yard line, you know, 30 seconds left in the half.
Yeah, kind of deal. I think if you've got a kicker that can consistently kick it out of, you know, kick it through the end zone, then you go do that.
Which I was surprised, but he had done that several times at, you know, up until that point in the game. So that's why I wanted to, you know, that's why I wanted to bring right. it up.
I don't think he did it so consistently that that was his brand.
No, but in this game, he had done okay.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Now, what did you think about the defense? We seem to be running more of a base nickel than a base dime due to what Auburn was doing.
Yeah.
You know, we had both of the freshman linebackers, you know, in the game from the get-go. What else jumped out at you on defense? Because obviously, you know, Shane Lee had a big day. McKinney had a big day. Raekwon Davis probably had his best day of the season. Yep. What else jumps out at you on defense?
Hey, I think all of that is right. I still really like, and I know they're probably the focal point of when we talk about run fits, and I think, you know, DJ being out is part of that too. I still really like the young linebackers. I wish, this will sound uglier than I mean it to. I wish Christian Harris understood the game like Shane Lee understands the game. He would be dangerous then.
and to your point, right? The game hasn't slowed down for him all the way yet.
Right.
But to your point, and you can't discount this, right? And so once again, it's not being sour grapes. It's really not. It's just looking at this, you know, from the right point of view. As I look at the defense for Auburn, you know, Marlon Davison Sr., Derek Brown Sr., nose tackle junior, outside linebacker junior, redshirt junior, 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 senior, redshirt senior, redshirt senior. I mean, these years that they've rattled off these fluky games has also been these games when they have like a ton of, you know, veteran leadership. And so I say that because when you look at Alabama and you look at the injuries they had on defense, and oh, by the way, Bama's defense gave up, you know, 34 points. Mm-hmm. Auburn's defense gave up 45 points. And 38. But here we go, you know, I think this game caught up on us having, you know, the lack of experience from some of these guys like a Christian Harris and going against, you know, a guy who, you know, in these two or three times they've won in the past decade, you know, Gus Malzahn was most effective when he was calling the plays. And, you know, I guess that's the other thing too, man. They had to throw out the kitchen sink to win. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they were pulling every freaking play out of the playbook that they had worked on back in August.
No doubt. What do you make of, and I'm not sure if this is defense or special teams. I'm going to go ahead and put it out. You asked me about the play to end the half. What did you make of the penalty to end the game?
Man, after we had all these damn penalties, you mean whenever they took the punter and split him wide?
Yep.
You know, that's that.
It was fourth and four. They were going to punt. They got a, you know, 12 men on the field, 5-yard penalty, then they were able to run out the clock from there. So essentially that was the game. That penalty was the end of the game.
You know, my take on this was Gus Malzahn with his little tricky dick stuff that he does. You know, Gus tricky dicked Alabama special teams coordinator, because for all the guys we have on the sideline keeping up with who and, you know, this, that, and the other, this was something Alabama had not planned for. Because from my take on it, when Alabama, you know, went back with their base defense, the only player that didn't know he was supposed to change was, you know, Waddle sitting back there to return the punt.
Right.
And so when you say we had 12 men on the field, the only person that didn't get the memo he was supposed to get off the field was Waddle. And so I think Gus out-schemed him there. I think that, you know, somebody's job has got to be in that situation to whistle at Waddle's ass and tell him to get off the field. And how many – and you don't practice that, right? When does the punt returner have to come off the field?
Yeah. It's – yeah, I think that it's one of those things where you have to read your cues, and what can be dangerous is when you read your cue correctly, but it's the wrong answer. And so, you know, the cue is the quarterback out there or is the punter out there? And so you have different players making different decisions based on who's out there. And the trick is when the both are out there, then Waddle is, you know, essentially keying on, yes, the punter, number X is out there, so I'm out here to return. And then, you know, whoever the rotation player is, he's reading the quarterback, and the quarterback's out there. And so I don't know. I mean, there's trickery in that, but I don't know that that bothers me so much. I think it's clever. It's a little tricky dick. But a lot of things you do with formations and player rotation, and we're going to line up in a bunch formation and move everyone out and try to catch, you know, we're going to move a tight end out of the box to soften the box or to create a matchup. And so a lot of personnel movement you do is standard operating procedure. This is a variance of that because it's across units. It's a punt unit versus an offense unit. And everything else that I've been talking about is really just within the context of the offense. And so it crosses units, which makes it unusual, and it worked to perfection. I think what bugs me more than the fact that they did it is Malzahn didn't have the nerve to own up to it. On one hand, he said, oh no, we didn't do that to catch them in a penalty. We did that because we wanted Waddle off the field. He's such a dangerous player. And well, we were just going to, you know, quick kick it like we did, you know, earlier in the game. And so on one hand, he says that, but then on the other hand, he says, oh, we've had this up our sleeve for the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks waiting for the right opportunity to roll it out and use it. And so he's really talking out of both sides of his mouth. And you know, our Swedish correspondent, we were texting today and he made the comment that, you know, one, and I think he's right. Gus doesn't want to just own it, because he wants to be viewed as an offensive genius. And so he wants it to be part of his aura as an offensive genius, not that he's just, you know, scheming, you know, special team personnel package to draw a penalty. So I thought that was kind of an interesting take. But I think it bugs me more that Gus just wouldn't own it when he was going to say stuff to indicate that he did it on purpose while saying he didn't do it on purpose. I'd rather him just, yeah, we were trying to catch him and we've had this, and that was the perfect opportunity, 4th and 4, and an opportunity to clinch the game. Yeah. That's why you draw that one up. I mean, that would have been a classier answer, I think.
Oh, I agree. But you know, as we said earlier, you know, in these two losses this season, and like you said, you know, here we are having to do a second show like this and in season that we haven't had to do now in right. quite a while. But just like the LSU game, man, these two losses, it does show you the talent that this team has and what they've able to overcome that I think other programs couldn't have overcome this year. And while it's very frustrating, you know, you do have to look at this and say, man, this is what it took for Alabama to lose these two games. They lost these two games where all kind of things went against them, and they still barely lost.
Right.
Give me your take on that. You know, pretending you're not an Alabama fan, right? Does that sound like sour grapes? Because I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying that that, you know, Georgia lost their game against South Carolina. Oklahoma lost, you know, a game against Kansas State where they got their butt whooped. We've lost two games now by a total of 8 points on the season with everything that could have possibly gone wrong. And the margin of error on those two games was a total of 8 points.
Yeah, I think you look at those. I think that's fair. I think, you know, there it's easy to tell the difference. And if you can't notice the difference, then, you know, I can't help you. But the difference between, you know, the Auburn and LSU losses versus the Clemson loss. I mean, the personality, the characteristics. I mean, we can go back and we did, you know, the Clemson game. There were some things that were unusual, but they kicked our butts. Auburn and LSU, just the profile of the game, of the loss, is very different. And when you can pick out and you know, we used to laugh about this when DeBose would say, you know, over the course of the game, there's five plays that'll change, you know, the game. And we used to think that was silly. And of all of the things that maybe we didn't like about and turned out, you know, not to like about, you know, Mike DeBose, damn if he wasn't right about that. And especially in these close games. And you can't handpick. I know that you can't, but if you could, you could quickly handpick just a couple of, I wouldn't need all five, and you know, and you could win both of those games.
No, absolutely. Do you have a mini game ball on defense?
You know, my candid answer is no. But the more I think about it, I'm just going to give a tip of the cap to Patrick Surtain. I thought he played very well. I thought his coverage was tight on. I think he had a penalty that was maybe a little ticky tack, but okay. And then there were a couple plays that he just had perfect. He was in fantastic position, and the receiver still caught the ball. And I think even Danielson said, if you're Patrick Surtain, this is the best I can do. And he's right. But they still made just the most improbable of catches. And so I know it sounds like I'm tearing the guy down, but I want to do the opposite. I want to build him up. Man, I thought he played a really good game. He just was the victim of some of the more improbable catches than you're gonna see. And so I want to give him just a cap nod for that.
All right. So I got three to give.
Oh, wow.
All right. So first one.
You got three defensive mini game balls on a defense that gave up 34 points. I want to hear this.
All right. So the first one I'm giving it to is Shane Lee. Lee had huge shoes to fill with the loss of Dylan Moses this season. And, I think he played his ass off in this game, and I think he did as well as he could have done under the circumstances as a true freshman in his first Alabama-Auburn game. You know, he finished with 7 tackles on the day. I don't recall, you know, him missing a tackle, you know, missing an assignment. I think that had some of the other – okay, I told you I thought the defense did enough to win to start with because – of the two pick sixes, which I'm gonna take away from their score. So obviously take those two pick sixes away. They gave up the 34 points. But I think if everybody had brought his and okay, my three mini game balls go to Xavier McKinney, Shane Lee, and Anthony Jennings. And I think if everybody had brought their level of intensity, this would have been a blowout win. And so Shane Lee gets my mini game ball just because of what he's had to do and the shoes he's had to fill as a true freshman. But Xavier McKinney gets my mini game ball because I think he played his ass off. And it's probably his second to last game of his career. And he's going to be yet another junior in a long list of juniors who we never see on Saturday as a senior. And then my third goes to Anthony Jennings because I think he also played very well. And I'm giving him the game ball for him coming back as a redshirt senior And when he could have gone and been a fourth or fifth or sixth round draft pick, and he would have made a 53 roster, because I think he will play on Sundays. And so I appreciate him coming back and providing some leadership to this team this year.
No, I think that's a good, I think, yeah, look, all of those guys are worthy. I like all three of them. And I agree, they brought a tremendous amount of effort into this game. So I think those are great picks. I guess we can pick over the scraps of special teams because we've probably covered. I was going to talk about Waddle's
Jalen Waddle real quick. Go ahead and talk about Waddle's kick return, man. We obviously have seen what this guy has done earlier in the season, but just talk about for the listeners, just break down the sequence of that particular punt return or kickoff return.
There was a portion of the game, and obviously we're kind of wrapped around one side of, this would have been a magnificent game to watch if you didn't care about any, if you didn't really care, who won, because there was an explosive portion of the game. And Waddle was certainly a part of that where, Auburn had just scored, one of the improbable touchdowns, and Waddle essentially said, hold my beer and return that 98 yards, no flags, which was certainly good. And that was a big touchdown. And again, we've talked about him being electric. He looked like he was the best player on the field. He looked like he was the fastest player on the field all day long. And that kick return was certainly no exception. He got an opening and he was gone. And it was easy to see. It was early. You could tell early in the play. And that would have been a good one to see in the stands because you probably could even have seen it better. But you could tell even on TV early in the play, oh, he's going to break this one. He really has a chance to break this one. And like I said, I'm sure in the stands, it was even more evident. That was an explosive play. Another just athletic demonstration, from Jalen Waddle there.
And what I think was so huge about that play is the timing of it, right? Because Auburn had just scored on a pick six. And so from a momentum standpoint, we had just given up a touchdown, on a third and eight from our 14, where we throw a pick six and we allow some momentum to go their way. And for him to step up and make that play when he did, obviously any point in the game would have been awesome. But just because of the timing of when that play happened, I think makes it even a bigger, a bigger statement in the events of the game. And really, if it wasn't for the ability of Auburn to get that late field goal at the half there, I think going into the half would have been very different from a momentum standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I think that definitely carried. That would have been the right momentum. We almost had anti-momentum because not only did they get the three, but, Coach was pretty well animated and distracted, from that. And that probably had some impact at half and certainly coming out of half where we went three and out. We talked about Bolivis a little bit. Talk about Todd Pirine averaging 45 on his three punts.
I'm happy for him. Obviously, after what occurred in the LSU game, and what we've talked about this guy's story, getting his opportunity, and so obviously, he's going to look back at this season and be very frustrated about the LSU, the play in the LSU game. But on this big stage, in this game, you can't point his direction for anything that determined the negative outcome of this game.
No, I agree. The fact that we only, and again, Auburn's defensive front is legit. The fact that Alabama only punted three times, I thought was impressive. And then Ty's consistency, he averaged 45 and he had a long of 47. And so, do the math. That's a tight clustering of punts. And so he was consistent across his punts. I almost expected him for nerves to get a hold of him for one of the kicks. And he was out there just ice water, and he was very consistent across all three of those kicks. So I thought that was quite impressive.
What was your and looking back at the stats of the situations too, it was a tough situation when he had his 47 yarder, right? We were at our 11 yard line and so we were right. Pinned in there and at least, you know, at least he was able to get Auburn, you know, back to the 42 yard line. So a very nice punt, you know, under a very difficult circumstance. Talk about, because actually of his three punts, you know, two went for 47 yards. So interestingly enough, you know, his long of the day, he had two punts for 47 yards. Talk about the punt earlier in the game where we were backed up at our 22 and Auburn was able to return the ball 37 yards after a very nice punt and, you know, get it, you know, flip the field to our 32 yard line and was able to score a touchdown in the first half after, you know, that punt return. Anything that jumped out at you on that breakdown, because that was probably one of the, you know, besides the missed field goal, that was the other special teams breakdown during this ball game.
Well, it's uncharacteristic, right? I think the Alabama punt coverage and kick coverage has been really stout
all
this
year.
Season.
Right.
And so it was uncharacteristic, you know, for them to get that return. And then we never root for injury, even Auburn players. And so when we took down the returner, he looked like he had been, you know, injured pretty significantly. And then he was back in the game, you know, not long after that. And that wasn't one of these kind of fluky fake injuries where I'm trying to, it was that at that point in the game, you know, he wasn't trying to burn clock or rest the defense or, you know, sort of slow down momentum. That was legit. He was dinged up and he was hurt. And then, you know, fortunately it was something that he was able to sort of rebound from and get back into the game. So that was good to see. But I think the big thing that stood out to me on that was just how uncharacteristic that long return was, because we've not seen that all year.
All right. Anything else on special teams here?
No, I don't think I don't. What do you got?
No, I don't have anything. I just want to make sure, because obviously we touched on some of this earlier in the show. So, you know, uncharacteristic of this team. You know, there's a significant break coming up ahead here, which this team hasn't had to deal with, right? This they're going to have another. I guess you would say, you know, they're going to have a long period of time with which they can get some young players some reps and kind of see what they have for turning the page for the, you know, for the season ahead, because there's going to be a long time before the bowl game.
Well, it will. You figure they're going to be in a New Year's Six game. And so, you know, how many times over the last several years has Alabama played two games before they'll play their next game? And so you think about, you know, next week's SEC championship game, and in the first round, the opening round of the playoffs is typically just before New Year's. Sometimes it's New Year's Eve. And so, had things unfolded just a little bit differently, we might potentially have two games before we'll have our next game. And so that'll be a little longer and a little different layoff. In a not fun kind of way. I used to, even back before the playoffs, and I think back especially, you know, maybe the Notre Dame championship, but there were others in there too, where this was the best month of the year almost. Not only holiday and all that stuff, but you know your team's about to play for a national title, and there's no, you know, it's done. It's a done deal, right? And that has almost been sort of a magical thing. And we don't get that this year. So something to go back to the drawing board and figure out for next season.
No, absolutely. Let me ask you this, because obviously, you know, Alabama has still, you know, has still won two national championships in the past 4 years, you know, and after this one will be done, it'll be, you know, two out of the past five kind of deal. And Saban, you know, Saban has mentioned, you know, that, you know, this team, while he's been there, right, you know, he has been known to mention that they could have had as many as eight, you know, during the time that he's been there, which is just scary to think about. My question to you is, because of the guys who were injured and because of the guys that will have time to be healthy come bowl game time, you know, most of these guys who are banged up will the guys who are just banged up will be healthy, and the guys who haven't been able to contribute for a few weeks will be able to go. I think I would hate to be the team that Alabama faces in the bowl game. I think back to that Michigan State game where they just laid it on them. And I think this team's going to take out some frustrations on whoever they play on New Year's Day.
I am torn on that. Because I don't disagree with, you know, that memory, and you're right. That sure. team, that Michigan State team, you know, paid for that. But I remember a couple games against Arkansas and a game against Utah where the team was just flat because it wasn't where they wanted to be. It wasn't what they wanted to play in.
Right.
And so for me, it feels more like a coin toss on what the personality of this team is going to be in this sort of one game season that will be the bowl game.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that'll be something good for us to talk about on the next show, but just wanted to get your thoughts since we don't have a team to talk about, you know, going forward right this second.
No, I think you're right. Like, you know, normally we tease the next game and what we're going to talk about. I think, you know, here we've got different things to tease, but, you know, certainly the personality of the team leading up to the bowl game, maybe a pre-show for the bowl game. I think, you know, we got some fan appreciation shows that we want to do. And then I think there's just a myriad of topics that we could, you know, deep dive, you know, quarterback coaching, you know, sort of what's next for the program. You know, players leaving, what the profile personality of next year's team could look like. So I think there's a lot of fun topics that we can get out and spend time with. And so you and I need to, you know, figure out schedules and calendars and record some of this stuff, because I think, you know, there's a lot of football that still needs to be talked.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I just did the math real quick on the past five seasons. So I just want to end this show by just mentioning that, as frustrating as this is, you know, to be sitting here with the second loss of the season, you know, I think back to the days pre-Saban and the decade that was like. And so I just went back over the past five seasons as of right now. And in the past five seasons, this team is, you know, this team is, let's see, this team is 65-5 in the past 5 years. 65-5 going back, you know, 2015, 16, 17, 18, and now. And so, I'm sorry, they are 65-6. I apologize. 65-6. And so, you know, for as frustrating as this is, you know, we just have to realize that, you know, you just can't win them all. And, you know, 65-6 is pretty damn good. Those six losses have come. No, what I guess what I'm saying is it's taken the kitchen sink to get those freaking, you know, minus the Clemson game last year. It's taken, you know, it's taken freaking, you know, a Herculean situation for, you know, five of those six losses out of the past 71 ball games. That just speaks to how dominant, you know, Alabama has been with Saban. So that's all I was trying to get out there.
Yeah, that's fair. And you could go back to almost every one of them and reasonably demonstrate how they were winnable, even as we lost them.
Right. Absolutely. Anything else for the listeners?
No, I think, you know, this is one of those games, and they're going to happen. And I think it's fair to sort of recall, man, in the context of, you know, the stretch that we're on and still on, you know, this is certainly something that, that we can absorb. I think we had a run where we lost to them 5 or 6 years in a row. And so it sort of, it is what it is. And, I think, you know, I think it's an interesting topic. What is this in terms of an inflection point forward? And I think that's a whole nother show, but I do think we need to come back and have that conversation. Yeah, I think that's what we look forward to. And then it'll be a mystery to see what the personality of this team is in the bowl game. And I'm kind of in a different way, but I'm kind of excited to see, because I think more so this year than what we've seen in prior years, this bowl game will tell us more about what next year's team is going to look like than I think prior bowl seasons have.
No, that's fair. And I will say to your point there that, you know, there's all this talk now, you know, in this current age of football with all these juniors who are going pro and, you know, I'm not going to play in this game and I don't want to take a chance of getting an injury and all that. And, you know, I hope I don't get proven wrong, and I don't think I will. I look forward to seeing all these juniors who are going to be playing on Sunday, strapping it up and playing in this game and playing their ass off. I like the character of these juniors. I don't see a Judy or a Ruggs or a Smith. You know, I don't see these guys checking out of this game and saying, hey, we're sitting this one out. So for Bama fans, I don't think that's something you're going to have to endure like other teams have to deal with that garbage.
Yeah, I certainly hope not. And I think you're right. I do think you're right. Again, that'll be a little bit of, you know, what we have to look for. I do like the character of this team different than maybe some of the others. And so I do hope that, you know, what you said, whoever we play in the ball game is going to get a mouthful of it. I hope that that's right.
All right, man. Well, take us out.
Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.